CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Monday, CliffCentral.com, and we're here to look after you, keep you company, fill you in with information and useful stuff, and then hopefully set you on your way so you can have a successful day. Isn't that a noble cause? That sounds like a good reason to get up in the morning and join you.
That's a great summary of what we do here.
Yeah, kind of. You know, sometimes I get it right. Sometimes. So I don't know. Start with something quite serious.
Oh.
I don't know if you remember the Brett Kavanaugh hearings.
Yeah, of course.
Just a few days ago when they basically dragged this guy through the mud for something he did 36 years ago in college. They pulled a professor out of obscurity, Christine Blasey Ford, and by they I mean the Democrats. And they made this poor woman testify in front of the whole Senate hearing, which must have been just excruciating for her. She had to recount what happened. It was a night that clearly traumatized her. Brett Kavanaugh was very embarrassed by the whole thing because he said his family was there and he was accused of being a gang rapist, which he obviously denied. And there was no credible evidence to show that he'd ever done anything approximating gang rape. And remember, there were a lot of people on the Democrat side who were saying, believe the accusers. You must always believe the victims. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about due process. Don't worry about evidence. None of that stuff should matter. Well, one of the Kavanaugh accusers have admitted fabricating the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Yes, she admitted this week that she made up her lurid tale of a backseat car rape, saying it was a tactic to try to derail the judge's confirmation.
Oh, my word.
To the Supreme Court. Now, before we get into the pros and cons of this, let me go through the details so you at least know what's happening here. Senator Chuck Grassley, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, revealed the fraud in a letter to the FBI and Justice Department on Friday, asking them to prosecute Judy Munro Leighton for lying to and obstructing Congress. Mr. Grassley said Mrs. Munro Leighton is a left-wing activist who hijacked another Jane Doe anonymous report about a backseat rape and claimed it was her own story, calling it a vicious assault.
So when she stole this other story, was it a Kavanaugh story?
Yeah. I am Jane Doe from Oceanside, California. Kavanaugh raped me, Miss Munro Leighton wrote in October the 3rd email, claiming to have been a victim of the judge.
Oh, sorry.
Mr. Grassley's investigators tried to reach her for a month, but were unsuccessful until this week when they spoke to her by phone. And she confessed that she was not the original Jane Doe and did that as a way to get attention.
So the real Jane Doe is still out there?
Possibly. She admitted to the false allegation and said it was actually that she had never met Justice Kavanaugh. I was angry and I sent it out, she told investigators.
So what repercussions does a person like this face?
Well, she's going to be prosecuted for lying. For lying to the Senate judiciary hearing. She's going to be prosecuted for what I suppose is tantamount to perjury. But here's the thing, right? And we've all heard stories like this. What I'm most upset about by this story, because I don't really care about the Republicans or the Democrats. I think the Democrats behaved despicably throughout this thing, trying to paint just this Brett Kavanaugh as this monster, drank too much beer and raped women. I mean, what an awful, awful thing to be accused of as a person who doesn't do that sort of thing. And then to have these accusations, and in this case, one of the accusations, and I'll bet you there will be more, turn out to be completely fabricated by a left-wing activist.
To have gone through all of that.
What my biggest concern is, to finish that very long, unwieldy sentence, my biggest concern is this does enormous damage to actual rape complaints.
Yep.
This is the cry wolf situation.
Yeah.
This is where real women all over the world who are going through awful, awful situations and have to deal with nasty, vicious, ugly, unbelievably cruel physical pain and torment now have to be questioned, because there are women like this Munro Leighton, who made up her story because she wanted to knock a judge off the Supreme Court.
She's undoing so much that has been done recently to build up this whole movement, encouraging women to come forward. She's making it take two steps back.
So what happens now? I mean, what should happen? What do you think?
Oh, she should really be punished. It's disgusting.
But the damage is done. You see, this is what is also adding to the melodrama of people not taking this whole Me Too movement as seriously as they did in the beginning. Because now, lady sitting at home feeling some type of way can actually make huge damage. She was deep in her feelings and she now sent an email and she made a major damage in a legal process.
Well, she has to go to jail. She has to be locked up in jail for doing this because her biggest victim is not Judge Kavanaugh, who's now been appointed anyway. And well done to the Senate Judiciary hearing for appointing him in the face of so much hysteria and madness and made up nonsense around this man. They did the right thing.
Mm.
Now,
the biggest victim?
No, in this case, again, the women who have been victimized, for real.
Mm-hmm.
Women who've actually been raped, who nobody seems to care about. How many times have the Democrats mentioned Christine Blasey Ford since that hearing?
Well, they got what they want out of her, and now she'll be discarded.
Kicked her to the curb. It's despicable. Mr. Grassley, this is the chairman, had previously asked the FBI to probe Julie Swetnick and her lawyer, anti-Trump accuser Michael Avenatti, for lying to Congress and obstructing. Mrs. Swetnick had originally claimed to have been the victim of gang rapes involving Judge Kavanaugh during school parties, saying she saw him and a friend spike punch to leave girls unable to resist. She later changed her story to say she saw Justice Kavanaugh and his friend near a punch bowl and could not identify them as actually having been part of any rape. So again, totally made up.
Yeah, they're making a lot of women angry.
Mm.
But this guy, like, he's got two daughters. All that controversy they went through, and everyone's saying, yeah, your dad's a rapist.
Is this Justice Kavanaugh?
Yeah, like, see, as you say, the damage is done. Like, how do you...
People will remember him as that always. So
of course.
He's tarnished with it. I mean, this is not to say that there may be other incidents that have happened that have never been reported.
Sure.
You know, who knows?
And I can remember people on television during that hearing going, oh, you could see by his behavior, he's a misogynist. Oh, you could see by the way he's conducting himself, he hasn't got the temperament to be a judge.
He looks like one.
Yeah, he's a rapist. Well.
Oh, dear.
Well, I beg to differ.
What a mess.
And this is why due process is important. And this is why you can't just believe the victim.
Before we put people on the cover of Time magazine and...
Correct. So what do you look like now if you were one of those people like Alyssa Milano sitting behind him grimacing during his testimony, going on television shows saying, well, clearly he's a rapist. What do you say now? Where is Alyssa Milano now? Except hoping for Who's the Boss to be resurrected.
Oh.
Where is she? I want her to go on TV and explain her position now and explain how this affects so many millions of women who are actually the victims of rape.
Well, Alyssa Milano could reboot Who's the Boss with Tony being a rapist.
What? Tony Dan?
Yeah. Well. Hey, Angela. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No consent.
You're speaking hypothetically. I thought you were saying Tony Danza was suspected of something.
Well,
like, no, yeah. Not Tony.
You know.
Just cry wolf. Go for it.
Yeah, this is bad. And now Christine's life as well. Supposedly she gets death threats now. She hasn't been able to live at home still to this day. But oh no, her
usefulness is at an end.
At least she's getting a documentary made on
is
her.
She?
That's
I wonder how they're gonna put that together, especially in the light of more of these allegations of absolutely false made up stories coming up. And can I read one other email quickly before we get into the more interesting and lighter stuff?
Sure.
And by interesting I don't mean that this is insignificant. I just mean it's worth referring to these things because we tend to make a big noise about them in the moment and then we forget about them. We don't follow up on these stories. So this is an interesting story from Dr. Liesel, who listens to us. I want to share this with you, not expecting an answer or advice, but I needed to share this with someone. Consider yourself my armchair psychologist. I'm a pediatrician. I work in a private hospital. Being a pediatrician, You have to deal with difficult parents. Having a sick child is a very emotional thing. But in 18 years of being a doctor, this is the first time anything like this has happened to me. On Friday, I did ward rounds and discharged a patient who'd been in the ward for 3 days. His father was not present in the ward when I was doing it. I went to my rooms to continue with my consultations. I received a phone call from the ward sister to say that the father is in the ward now and wants to see me. I requested him to come to my rooms, which he refused. He had been difficult since admission, so I went to the ward to talk to him. He became aggressive, screaming, swearing, and hitting things. I told him I will not talk to him if he's going to be aggressive, and I walked out of the ward. I was walking down the corridor and noticed he was following me. I walked faster. He grabbed my wrist. I tried to break free from his grip, but I wasn't strong enough. In a surreal moment, I was wondering if I should scream. The hospital has been my second home for 10 years. I have walked these corridors many a night or early day. This was broad daylight. After another attempt to free myself from his grip, I started screaming. It felt so embarrassing. Further away, there were patients, and I wondered what they were thinking. First, I just screamed. Then I screamed, "Help! Please call security." I don't know how many times I screamed this. By that time, he had me pinned against the wall with his left arm, his right arm ready to hit me. This was the corridor of the management office where a meeting was being held. Soon the staff came to see what the screaming was about. In another surreal moment, the staff were standing there, looking at me, pinned against the wall by this man, ready to hit me. Eventually he let go and I fled to my rooms, where I locked the doors. At least my colleagues were there to offer support. Hospital security escorted him off the premises. Soon the hospital management were in my rooms to consult me. I was later told by management that that man is going to make a complaint of racism against me at the HPS, Health Practitioners Council of South Africa, and the Department of Health, and that he'll go to the media. I'm white and quite a petite woman. He's a black man. He kept on saying things like, "You will not talk to me like that. You will not throw your weight around like this. We have so much work to still do. My heart is broken. My ego is shattered. I'm tearful. But I will return to work tomorrow, trying to convince myself that this was the one in a million case. All will be fine. I do wonder if I should start carrying pepper spray as I walk the corridors at night, on the way to saving another child's life. Where will I keep it? I normally have only my cell phone and a pen on me. Should I have done something differently? Maybe I should consult with my office door open." I consulted with an attorney and advocate over the week and opened a case with the police. They will be getting statements from the witnesses and the alleged assaulter tomorrow. I'm really scared. I've lost my self-confidence, but I'll put in a brave face tomorrow because there are other patients who need me, who are grateful, and I love my job. Thanks for the great, entertaining, informative show every morning. I truly appreciate it. Yours, Liesl.
Wow, wow, wow.
So, I mean, where do we go with this? Because here's a false accusation. This obviously had nothing to do with racism. But you see, if you call someone a rapist or a racist, and it's interesting there's only one letter's difference between the two, there isn't really any going back from those things. And the one is far more serious than the other. I mean, if you're accused of rape, it's a lot worse than if you're accused of racism. But here's this woman who's working to help other people's children. She's a doctor for children. And a father who can't behave himself comes in there. Surely, he's emotional. His kid has been sick, and that would make any... It speaks well of his character that he was worried about his kid. But to take it out on this woman, and then when she screams for help because you're assaulting her, you accuse her of racism, seems to be like a desperate attempt at trying to assuage your guilt.
What an awful situation.
I mean, what do you even say to someone like Liesl? I don't know what to say about this. It seems like that is such an ugly last resort. It's like you're out of all the options, so you just scream racism. And this is my problem, as with the Kavanaugh accuser, who turns out to be a fake, is what this does is it waters down actual racist incidents. It makes actual racism seem like it's not an important thing. It's a cry wolf in that respect.
Just because it's an argument between two human beings of different race doesn't mean it's racism.
Well, who knows anymore? Because racism used to be...
What does it mean that white people and black people aren't allowed to argue?
It used to be that there were lines. You knew what a rape was once, right? You knew, and I'm blurring these on purpose. Once we knew a rape was forced penetration by a man, right? Now, There are people blurring those lines, saying, well, if the man was around a punch bowl and another man was there, and then there were women around, and one of those women felt that she'd been inappropriately touched, that that's rape. She passed out, yeah. And that that was rape. Now suddenly it's very blurry. Now anything between touching someone's hand inappropriately and actual physical violence and rape, which could result in all kinds of ugliness, including death, they're all the same. We've blurred the lines. And the same goes for racism. Racism used to be treating someone differently on the basis of their race and to their detriment, discriminating against them.
Mm.
Now racism is, as Leanne says, any argument between a white and a black person that doesn't go in the favor of the one side. It's ridiculous. What we're doing by taking the two opposite ends of this, the serious side and the trivial side, and making it all gray, is that it has the effect of making the serious things look trivial and the trivial things look serious. And nobody wins from that. The real victims get very badly hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are making shit up get treated like real victims.
I had an argument in a doctor's room in a hospital, big hospital, where I had my mom next to me, who is in a wheelchair because she had a stroke. And with my mom's carer, the three of us are sitting waiting for our appointment. And next to us in the waiting room is another carer with her black patient. At some point, my mom has she had a tracheostomy, and that's still not closed, so she has dressing over that. She coughed, and we needed to change the dressing. So we changed it, wrapped it up in some tissue paper and put it into the bin, which was plastic lined, and in the waiting room, in the hospital. This is a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And the carer of the other patient started speaking to my carer, to my mom's carer, and saying that this wasn't allowed, it's unhygienic, etc. You must do this, you mustn't do that. I couldn't pick up on everything that was said, but I could get the gist of it. Anyway, long story short, it ended up in a massive fight where I was saying to her, just leave us alone. You care for your patient, we'll care for ours. We were there under extremely sensitive circumstances. We'd been through absolute hell for a year and a half. She had no idea what we were there for. Her patient had hurt her ankle in a sporting incident. My mom had almost died three times and had been in ICU for a year on the brink of death. And here she was telling us what to do with a plaster. And as I was arguing with this woman, because we actually started, everyone started shouting at each other, I thought, oh boy, you know what's going to happen.
Mm.
Race is going to come into this. And I was actually waiting for it. But thank God it didn't. And the reason it didn't is because I'm white and my carer, my mom's carer is black. And these two women were black. So they wanted to say something about being white, but they couldn't because there were two of us, a white and a black, arguing. But you could see they wanted to turn it into a race thing. They then wanted to report us to the health commission and...
Wait, can you imagine? But you see, this is just...
And on the way out, she did the most annoying thing ever, the carer. She leaned over, touched my mom, touched her hands and held her hands and said, I hope you get better soon, darling. And that just flicked a switch in me. And I said, don't you dare touch my mother. Ran out behind them and had to stop myself. But people in hospitals can get extremely highly strung.
And how it just reaches this point from an argument around a plaster to now want to report you to
them. Yeah, just insane, right? It's insane. But you see, when people are extremely sensitive...
That's it.
Or when they're very tetchy or they've had a bad day, they say things. And this is why I always think Twitter is like for people who've had a bad day. Because everybody on there is tetchy and everybody on there is sensitive. And that's why you cannot have a reasonable argument there anymore. It's all changed. The rules are different now. Stay away from all these people who've had a bad day. Is Graham on the line? Okay. Is he on phone or on Skype? Okay, let me go to the phones. Sorry, I'm shouting at Nola like this, but there we are.
Okay. What did we do wrong?
She was shouting in my ear. Hey, Graham, what's up? Graham, you there? Graham? Hello? No, It's gone. All right. On to some other stuff. What do you got for us?
Well, I was going to tell you about H&M. You know, they had a conference.
Oh, they were going to solve all this stuff.
And do we really want to talk more race and racism?
We do. What did H&M discover?
It all stemmed, of course, from that Coolest Monkey t-shirt, which was worn by a little black boy. Mm-hmm. That was pulled off the shelves after a huge outrage. EFF was involved, etc. And they decided they were now going to conduct workshops in their global capacity as H&M.
So, may I just
to address the disaster.
Clarify here. This was an H&M decision. They weren't forced to do this by anyone. They weren't pushed to. They sat and they decided, I know what we should do. We should host these. Yeah. Okay.
I think they realized that the damage, the sensitivity in South Africa to this, because this t-shirt was available all over.
Yeah, because an international ad agency that made the decision to make the ad.
Yeah.
So they didn't even know it was going to come to South Africa. They probably didn't care.
So they realized very quickly, okay, we need to be hypersensitive when it comes to this in South Africa. Let's hold workshops and let's pull this right. I don't think they did it to prove a point to say, look, this is how sorry we are that we're having this conference. They actually have used it to really educate people within the company on how it works in South Africa and what's cool and what's not.
Right.
So because of this widespread anger shown by everyone, including the customers of H&M, they were also asking, why were we selling this t-shirt? You know, their own employees were doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So they did have a big meeting. The country manager for South Africa, H&M country manager, said that removing the hoodie and the ad wasn't enough. Our usually high standards have failed us. They were not met. And so they met with the Anti-Racism Network SA National Conference or Annual Conference on Thursday. She then sat there and explained what steps the company had taken to move on from this campaign. She said that questions had been raised after the incident about whether H&M was a racist company. She said, no, this is a big mistake. We simply got it very wrong. Even involved in all of this, she called on the Ahmed Getrada Foundation and the Institute for Justice and Reconciliation. She said, although the company had 170,000 employees from diverse backgrounds, it recognized the need to increase awareness and education across the organization, not just in terms of what met the eye, but also diversity in terms of thought and perspective. So they've collaborated with a whole lot of people in these workshops. So store managers, assistant store managers, all regional teams are now better educated on how to deal with these situations in South Africa. They will also employ more local designers and local advertising companies. Two of each.
Okay.
Does this change anything for anyone?
Graham, what's up, dude?
Hey, guys. How's the team? How are you guys doing?
Yeah, good. Go ahead.
So listening to you guys talk about like race hysteria, and it made me think of a podcast I was listening to yesterday afternoon.
Yeah.
Do you know Jeffrey Dahmer, when he was caught, was asked why most of his victims were African-American? And he quickly defended himself and said, no, it was just the area that he was in that was predominantly African-American. So that is how hysterical we are as a society, where a cannibal, like serial murderer, doesn't want to appear racist. That's how hysterical we have become. I just thought that's a little trope I thought I'd throw in the mix there.
I would have liked to have known if there was a difference in taste, you know?
But that's the whole point. I mean, the guy's murdering and eating people, but he doesn't want people to think he's a racist. That's how hysterical we are as a society.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, guys. Man. Come on, everyone.
Well, we've got two people, we've got two polls of opinion in America at the moment. They're going into their midterm elections tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
So the sixth. The big story at the moment is this caravan, you know, the immigrant caravan?
Yes.
So there are two points of view here. There's the Donald Trump saying this is a crisis, these immigrants are coming, there could be Middle Eastern terrorists among them. You better watch out because these evil people are coming to the border and they're going to swamp through. They're going to swamp us. They're going to take over our jobs. Yeah, immigrants, immigrants, immigrants. The caravan, the caravan, the caravan. And then on the other side, you've got the Democrats who are saying anybody who's opposed to these immigrants coming in is a racist. Now, what about the sensible opinion somewhere in the middle? What about the fact
that... Well, they don't get heard, unfortunately, Gareth. Like, people like your show and the rest of us who just try to have a conversation very gingerly walking on eggshells around all of this, we don't get heard. The truth is, yes, there are women and children in that caravan. But the other truth is, yes, the majority of them are single men who are running away from their country and are quite hostile, regardless of the color of their skin. And whether they're coming to America legally, then it's fine. But the whole point is they're trying to get in illegally. It's a semi-invasion. And I promise you CNN will be there taking pictures of crying kids the moment they reach the border. I guarantee you. And then they will say it's all Trump's fault.
Well, there are already cartoons being published of like these strong military men standing there with their guns pointed at screaming children. I mean, we're already seeing...
Those poor bastards. I mean, what they have to deal with. They're trying to protect millions of Americans at the same time. But don't be a racist.
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. It's got out of control. Anyway, thanks, dude.
All right, cool, man.
Bye. Bye. Of course, and the real victims of all of this are the same, and this brings us to the point that I raised at 7 o'clock. The same people in the Kavanaugh situation, real victims, women who've actually been raped, end up looking like they're also part of this attention-seeking nonsense that a fake accuser like this woman who's just been outed now turns out to be.
So damaging.
Massive damage. Same goes for racism. Everyone on the internet suddenly a racist. Then, you know what? That means no one is. And we know that there are real racists out there.
You'll wipe out racism purely by saying everyone's racist.
Right. Exactly. You're doing your own argument damage. And the same thing goes in America about this immigration thing. Hysteria on both sides. Oh my God, the immigrants are coming and they're going to take over. It's going to be a disaster. They're coming with their drugs and their guns and their crime and they're going to break through the wall and kill us all. Ugh. And then on the other side, you've got, well, anyone who doesn't want to let just anybody walk into the country without any papers, got to be a racist. That's what Trump is. See? It's also nonsense.
But what I find so funny about the times that we are living in for just using simple words is that hysteria is matched with hysteria.
Yes.
And people don't identify that they are being hysterical themselves and reacting.
They only see it in the other side.
And you can't win. If you're both butting heads at the same point, someone has to be the bigger person. Someone has to step back and view things objectively and be able to identify when you are deciding subjectively.
Well, that's what leaders are for, right? That's what we'd expect of our leaders, but who?
You can't.
Who do you choose? Anyway.
I'm really crossing fingers at this because we've really said such great things about the Obamas and what they've done and. But remember a couple of months ago, it was a big thing that they signed a Netflix deal.
Mm-hmm.
They have a production company and they're going to produce certain things. And the Obamas really have done an amazing job at giving Trump his space. They really haven't commented much.
I would agree with you. Like Barack Obama stayed the hell out of the current political situation. The first time he spoke really about it in the last while was at the Nelson Mandela lecture. And even then, he didn't talk directly about Trump at all.
Yeah. But now they've announced the first project that they've commissioned through their production company. And it's a book by Michael Lewis called The Fifth Risk. And people are saying the book is very critical of Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just saying, if this is the stance they're taking, wow, this is a damage to their legacy and what type of people they are. The first project you commission is something that is just taking stab after stab after stab at Trump. Like, talk about when they go low, we go high.
Yeah. Well, I heard an interesting point of view. I mean, that was Michelle Obama's line, right? Mm. When they go low, we go high.
But this isn't the way to do it. This isn't the way to move past and deal with things.
I heard John Stewart, and someone actually referred to him in the messages this morning, talking about how he reckons that the mainstream media have got this love-hate affair with Donald Trump going on. He gives them great ratings. So they have to cover him. And in covering him, they perpetuate this problem, right? And it was something that I think Chelsea Handler also referred to the other day. She said, well, the media have got to stop reporting on Trump. But they can't help it. He's ratings gold.
Same with the EFF here. There's nothing to report, but it's ratings gold. It's clickbait crap.
Especially when you see the president of the free world walking up to Air Force One with an umbrella, and then he gets to the top of the staircase and goes, oh, no, this umbrella can't fit into the airplane, so he just drops it.
He just leaves it there. He didn't know what to do with it.
Did you guys see that video?
I don't think he's anyone's ever shown him how to pull down an umbrella. But
it never
comes. But this is the kind of thing, like, they love the Trump looks stupid, right?
Yeah.
Honestly, it's very childish. It's tit for tat. And you're spreading division. You're sowing division. And then Trump goes, no, you're sowing division. And it's meh, 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 meh. It's ridiculous. What else is in the news?
Yeah. Okay, let's really go lighter
now. I've got a bit of light as well.
Okay, so Gareth, this is for you. In the spirit of reboots galore, there's a new late 80s, 90s series that is in the works of having a reboot, and that is...
Who's the Boss?
No. The Nanny.
Oh my God. Fran Drescher.
But is she going to be in it? Or they found someone with a higher voice?
What was his name?
Who?
Mr. Sheffield.
Fran Drescher is now going to be part of the team putting this new Nanny reboot together.
Is it not called The Granny?
Oh, I see what you're doing there. And they are seriously in negotiations with Cardi B
to be the nanny.
Oh, my word.
I'm in.
The nanny.
I'm in. I'm watching.
Listen, if she had a script, I would at least be able to understand what she was saying half the time.
Yeah.
It might make sense.
But she is like a hood Fran Drescher when you think about
right?
I like her.
The tone, the nasal, like high-pitched voice. Yeah. It could actually work.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
No, it's going to happen. It'll be brilliant.
Yeah, they're saying for now they aren't really looking at anything serious, but for example, like a 10-episode thing on Netflix or Amazon, and Cardi is considering it for now.
All right. Hey, speaking of people considering jobs, I see, I love her, so I don't have a problem with this, but I do think it speaks very ill of the state of our media business that the same people get used for everything. Now, I see Anela's the host of The Voice.
Yes.
I mean, I don't mind. You
safe bets, Gareth, safe bets.
Yeah, I don't mind that Anela gets it because I know she's hugely competent and she'll do a great job. But you telling me they couldn't find any new talent. I mean, Anela's just come off a television show of her own, right? Mm. She stopped doing that not so long ago. She is used in advertising left, right, and center. You hear her voice everywhere. She's doing very well, and I don't think anybody can say, oh, open up the industry in respect to this, because she's absolutely the most competent person to do all the jobs she's done. But now she's also doing The Voice.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't find anyone else who's talented, or because they only can trust Anela.
There's a lot of recycling that goes on in this industry. And purely because it's so tiny. This isn't America, where we've got so much choice.
Well, there we go. Look, congratulations to her. I'm very happy.
Also, yeah, I don't mean to sound crass.
Stupid MNET.
And Anela's also got her own transport. Most of the talent in this country are still relying on...
Oh, Benjamin. What? Benjamin.
What? It's the truth. Tough out here.
You know, I get it and I don't get it all at the same time. Like, you get it. You slap Anela's name on anything.
That too.
People are going to watch... You know she's going to pitch up on set. You know she's going to carry the show well. She has the experience.
That's true.
So it's kind of like a And then you weigh it up with getting someone new who you have to build up. You have to really get the audience excited. Then this person, I've heard of some people on screens who've been cast for things and then they've had to be trained how to read an auto cue and deliver it naturally. So
and
you
no one's got time for that.
Yeah, and it's money and someone has to do it. It's like,
so easy to cry about this, but just be the next Anela. But you've got to start early. You can't just be like, well, I'm 28 and I'm good looking. And yeah, I'm just bored. I want to do this.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. There is so much that goes into that.
It's the 10,000 hours rule.
She used to be on 5FM.
Yeah.
Well, she started on campus radio.
She was on campus radio. Yeah. She is who she is. She didn't go on like crash course diets or like gimmicky things. She's just like, fuck it. I'm me.
Yeah.
I'm doing me. And I'm going to love Beyonce and whatever else she does. And
so, that's how you quantify
Anela. But people must stop getting upset. It's not like by mistake that stars are stars, unless you're Kim Kardashian. But then again, she had a mother who pushed her into a bed with Ray J. But still, that's not a mistake. That was a plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In other words, Ben, show business is not easy.
it's
just
because
the people in it make it look easy. Yeah. Right. Damn straight.
Pop culture commentator Ben Coffinski.
Well, yes. I mean, I've been doing it for years, yeah. So I take great pride in this.
Speaking of pop culture, anybody like animated movies?
All the time.
Yeah, I do. I saw one the other night that made me cry.
Oh.
Well, more and more of these movies, you know, they're obviously
Don't you want to know which movie made me cry?
Oh, sorry, was yes, go. Go.
No, you don't want to know.
Did it involve animals?
I'm going to cry.
What was it?
It's called Coco.
Which one is that now?
It's a Pixar movie. It's a Pixar movie about this Mexican family and their relatives who died, and how the Mexican Day of the Dead comes, and then the relatives come over the bridge and meet
them. Big holiday that.
Yeah, and it's this story of this kid who wants to play guitar like his hero. It's the sweetest movie. Oh. It's absolutely...
And then what happens? You become a drug mule.
I'm not going to spoil the story. Go watch it.
But what made you cry?
It was when he was muling.
Listen, it's a beautiful story. Go and watch it, you assholes.
More and more animated movies are being made only for adults.
Yes.
Yeah.
This one is.
It's just a style of movie making. Some of it's decidedly not for kids. You know, it's a medium that allows for ultimate creativity. It can be really heartbreaking, shocking, complicated, or surreal in ways that live action can't get close to, no matter how big the budget.
But if you look at like some of the greatest and darkest of adult comedies, Archer, Paradise PD, Brickleberry, Rick and Morty.
Yep.
These are the shows that take to another level and are some of my favorites, all animated.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Japanese animated film master, Hayao Miyazaki.
Just one more time, please.
Hayao Miyazaki.
Thank you.
Oh, right.
He apparently does these absolutely beautiful movies in animation. There's one called Howl's. It's as if you're howling at the moon. Howl's Moving Castle. It's some of it's fantasy, some of it's real.
I like that. I love animated movies. I don't think that they're for children.
There's My Neighbor Totoro of his as well.
No, you got to watch Coco. Honestly, such a sweet movie.
Did it surprise you when you started crying?
Yeah, it was like, oh my God, I'm feeling for these made-up characters.
I've actually never really been into animation much.
Oh, come on. The Lion King?
No.
No?
Okay, I'm like, okay, so Scar came into the scene and then...
Madagascar.
Madagascar is so cool.
No, like a
Toy Story.
Yeah, I love to move it, move it. And
but even really old school, like, do you remember Fantasia from 1940?
Yeah,
Jeepers, Grandma.
Which was Fantasia, who won American Idol.
Mickey Mouse type thing. You know, as the caption says here, if you watched Fantasia as a kid and you were like, the fuck is this? Watching Fantasia as an adult is a very different and much better experience. So some of these things you watch in, you know, afterwards and you think, oh, okay, now I understand. There's an Oscar-nominated love story called Chico and Rito.
Hmm.
Really romantic, telling a story of a piano player and a singer who fall for each other. There was Fantastic Mr. Fox, which was lovely.
I loved that. That was a Roald Dahl book.
Yeah. Of course, Wallace and Gromit are always great. A Scanner Darkly. That was a movie that they filmed properly with real actors, Keanu Reeves, Robert Downey Jr., Winona Ryder. And then it was later animated in a process which took more than a year.
That sounds fantastic.
Very impressive, apparently, digitally, even though it was 2016 and it's now 2018. And there's one that's obviously adult called Sausage Party.
Oh, we watched the Seth Rogen one.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, that was quite rough.
Which apparently ended up being a meditation on life, death, and the nature of belief.
Oh, yeah.
It was a whole bunch of high jokes and the strangest orgy in film history.
With what? Sausages.
All kinds of
supermarket
goods.
Oh.
It's a Seth Rogen thing.
Oh.
And then there's Loving Vincent, which I think must really be quite beautiful. It's a story about the life and death of Vincent van Gogh, created completely with oil paintings, done in a few styles, but his mostly.
Wow.
So it must be really beautiful, gorgeous visuals.
Every frame must be like a work of art.
That's it, yeah. Loving Vincent, and a 2017 movie.
Oh, I'd watch that.
Yeah.
Sure, that's good. Yeah, they really are. They're so good at this stuff now, huh? It's beautiful. By the way, if you're wondering where Rich Mulholland is today, because we usually speak to Rich on a Monday, he's not here because he's in Brazil.
Oh, Brazil.
Yeah, he's a strategic consultant to the new president, Bolsonaro.
Oh, goodness me. Yeah.
Congratulations to him.
Very right-wing,
yeah. So you better watch out for that.
Okay, before we finish, can we talk about two Halloween costumes that are causing a stir?
Bring it on.
If you were to get a Halloween costume this year...
We talked about it the other day. We all tried to be as offensive as we could, remember?
Well, I think someone's beaten us, Gareth. I'm not even going to say guess because it's going to waste time. But I think the head of comedy at ITV, so ITV is, of course, a network over in England, he has dressed up as Khashoggi's killer. And he's dressed up as a Saudi man with the headpiece and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Blood all over him, and he's holding a hand.
A chopped off hand.
And he went to a Halloween party as that.
Oh, my gosh.
I think that one's the most insensitive, because that's not even too
soon. Hashtag too soon.
That's not even too soon. It's just...
It was basically Khashoggi's not even cold.
So ITV comedy boss, Asif Zubairi. Wow. He's gone and done that.
Asif. Yeah. So he's Muslim?
I don't know. See, I don't know what he identifies as. It's not for us to say.
Well, because I mean...
He might identify as a Christian woman.
And then Kim Kardashian was really upset that no one from her work fan base recognized who her and Kanye got dressed up as.
Who did they dress up as?
As Pam Anderson and Tommy Lee.
Oh, but that's ironic.
And then she said, she said people were retarded for failing to recognize this. So her Instagram post was Pam and Tommy Lee. And she said, Pam Anderson, Tommy Lee, love dressing up as these legends, Halloween 2018.
Okay.
See,
and she referred, and that's a backlash because she called people retarded for not recognizing.
That's great. My word.
That is great.
These people are sly. She knows that people... Her dressing up as Pam will get people talking and they're just
clever.
Playing us.
It's good. Yeah. I like it. There's a little bit of irony as well. Okay. All righty. Well, that's just about all that we've got time for this morning. As I said, Rich is not going to be able to join us, and we will obviously have some catching up to do with him when he does get back. But we'll find out whether or not he's consulting to Bolsonaro upon his return as well. And coming up in a little while, you may remember we did an interview with Paul Hoffman, who's the author. He's the guy who wrote a book about corruption in South Africa. And he said he was interested in the rule of law here. We discussed all matter of things from the arms deal to PRASA, what needs to be done going forward. And Paul Hoffman is our replay interview just after 8 o'clock this morning. It's time for the unnews. I don't have the music for you, so you'll just have to hear. The petrol price is coming down in South Africa this week by a whole 30 cents. Yay. This is the first time in 8 months the price is coming down. But as the saying goes, beware of the ANC bearing gifts. Justin Bieber has caused quite a stir with a new face tattoo. Fans were speculating what inspired it or what it means. Turns out, though, it was just dirt. Yes, kids. Justin Bieber is just dirty today. He's lost the will to wash or do anything productive with his life. And if he was your hero, you need to think about that. And finally, Owen Farrell has not been cited for his assault on André Esterhazen at Twickenham over the weekend. World Rugby found watching a replay of the incident very uncomfortable. But they knew if they sanctioned the English player, it would be like admitting that Angus Gardner was wrong. They couldn't have that, so doubling down on stupid was the only play for them. That is your unnews for this morning. Thank you for joining us. We will catch you tomorrow between 6 and 9. That's right. CliffCentral.com